Are we going to get cats in our artwork 2 weeks in a row?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Parkour cat, murdered soul suspect.
No.
Yes. Breaking Ashes rules. I think if we have cats 3 episodes in a row, right, that's there's like some demon will come out of the podcast. Like we've summoned the mystical demon.
That'd be amazing. Anyway.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 156, and I am your host, Matt.
I'm Ash.
And I'm Scott. Hey, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
We're here with another week.
It's crazy. It's been a busy week.
I think some programming notes are in order. This is probably going to come out right after E3, but this is not going to be the E3 episode. I believe that we are going to do another bonus episode where we talk about E3. So,
correct.
I guess if you came here looking for E3 news, sorry. And if you came here looking for an escape from E3 news, congratulations. We're here
Yay!
To help.
Perfect.
We will have a podcast to serve your needs if you came here for the former.
Yes.
I always laugh because John Oliver has that new show on HBO. Have you guys watched it at all?
I've seen clips of it. He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I saw one.
It's really funny, but the ads they run for it always remind me of us because he's like, it's like all the news that happens that week and we'll talk about it on Sunday. He's like, yeah, we'll talk about it on Sunday. And he's like, if it happens on Monday, he's like, we'll talk about it on Sunday. And he's like, if it happens on Wednesday, he's like, again, we'll talk about it on Sunday. And if it's news you need to know on Friday, and he's like, you're going to have to wait 2 days. We'll just talk about it on Sunday. I don't know what you guys are looking for.
Well, we're kind of old fashioned.
I'm telling you, if you guys don't listen to the Bugle, it is time to start because it's the same thing. With him and his comedy partner, like from England, from the UK. Andy Zaltzman, and it's a little British, but he writes the same, like the writing on that show is the same as the writing on the podcast. So it's good. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, the show is really good. Yeah.
He went on a rant about Comcast. I don't know if you guys saw his Comcast rant, but it was amazing about net neutrality. So good.
Yeah.
Where he like. Motivated the internet to go.
Yes. Yeah. That was really, really well done.
I went to that page the next day, and where all of the other FCC referendums have like 100 comments, there at like the day after, there were 46,000 comments on that particular issue.
Wow.
Nice.
People had already responded to. So,
that's a way to do it.
Let's do the rundown.
So what we are going to talk about today is Murdered Soul Suspect, which came out for all the consoles.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. I did get it, oddly enough. And it wasn't a Russian mail order bride, oddly enough. It was actually a Steam key, believe it or not. And then the movie Edge of Tomorrow. And then we played Max and the Curse of Brotherhood, which is not a new game, but was the one of the first games with gold games to come out for Xbox One starting in June, which was great. And we're going to talk a little bit about The Wolf Among Us. And then we have some news about Ant-Man and CD Projekt Red's summer conference announcement thing that they did. And then in our Naquato, which I'm assuming is Edge of Tomorrow themed, if you kept repeating the past 24 hours over and over again, what is the one thing that you would change? And interestingly enough, that ties into Murdered Soul Suspect as well.
Excellent.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, today's podcast is once again brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre, thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook and help out the podcast by going to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA. You sign up, you get a free book, and we get a little help to keep this show running.
That's right.
Absolutely. I still like so still liking Dad Audible. Is Fat. Still enjoying that.
It's great. Yeah, it's a great book.
It's really good.
All right, so let's kick it off with Ash. What have you been up to?
Hello, guys.
Hello.
I feel like it's been a really long time. Has it been a long time? I never know anymore.
It's actually been a shorter time.
Yeah. Has it been a shorter time?
Yeah. Wow.
It feels like forever.
Monday.
Wow, really? That's it?
Yeah.
It means I just miss you guys. I played a lot of Watch Dogs this week. I played it and completed the main storyline. I think the main storyline took me about 30 hours-ish, which was pretty long. And I've done a lot of the side stuff, but I still have not even scratched the surface of that game. So it is a absolutely massive beast of a game.
What do you mean by not scratching the surface?
I mean, honestly, okay, there are so many side missions and things to do in this game. It makes Assassin's Creed games look small. Yeah. So, for instance, there's missions where you have to, like, assault a caravan. But there's not just a handful of them. There's, like, 20 of them that you have to do. And there's missions where you have to, like, deliver cars. And there's, like, 20 of those. And there's missions where you have to, like, solve a murder. And there's, like, 8 or 9 of those. Mm-hmm. And so you just keep, you know, solving all these missions and doing things. And they actually unlock different abilities and different guns. And so everything you do, it just keeps building and building and building, and it's kind of absurd. Good thing is the majority of the side missions in the game are pretty fun. Even the collection and stuff is actually enjoyable. I enjoy doing a lot of the collection and stuff. They have these crazy – I'll just mention this really quick. There's these things called digital trips in the game, which I don't know if, Matt, if you've had a chance to do one of those yet. But they are mini games that are like – honestly, one of the mini games cost probably more to produce than I would say almost all of the games in the Indie Mega Booth put together. Like one of the mini games. So there's one called like Spider Tank, where you play as a gigantic walking tank inside downtown Chicago, and the tank has its own abilities. It can climb up buildings.
Oh, these are like – there's like free-running games too, right, where you're collecting coins and stuff?
Crazy. Yeah. There's one called Hell Driver where you play as like more or less like you play in this crazy Twisted Metal-style car that can shoot fire out of its wheels, and you basically have all these mini-games where you have to run people over.
Yeah.
And it's – but the thing about it is they're really, really well done. They're unbelievably polished. They're super fun to play, and I just sat down and played like the Hell Driver one this morning for 2 hours, and I was like, holy crap, like this is its own game. This is its own standalone game, and it's just kind of buried inside Watch Dogs. And
I did one of the free running ones because my Ubisoft account was like screwed up or something. Like,
oh, yeah?
Like if you're not connected to it, it won't let you play any of those mini games, and then it, like, all of a sudden it unglitched itself the other day, and it was like, fine, I can do it again.
Yeah, but it's fun. And there's – the thing that's crazy about this is we talked about the skill bush last week and how there's like a billion skills to unlock. There's skills inside the mini games. There's skill trees inside the mini games.
Oh my God.
There's mini tank skills, and then there's like hell driving skills. And I'm like, oh my God, like there's so many fucking things in this game. I don't even know. So it's actually been fun. I've been enjoying it. It's been a nice, you know, just run around causing chaos inside Watch Dogs. I went and saw Edge of Tomorrow, which we'll talk about in the reviews, which was not a movie I had been really tracking all that much, but I actually saw some of the armor that they had from that movie on display at Comic-Con last year, which was my first exposure really to Edge of Tomorrow. So I saw their mech suits there behind some glass at Comic-Con, and I thought they looked really cool. And went and saw that with my wife, and it was surprising. We'll talk about it later. And I'm traveling a bit this summer, and we finally booked all of our trips and stuff, so I'm excited to get the hell out of here. So that's all I've been doing. What about you, Scott?
Well, I've been playing Murdered Soul Suspect, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And I played and completed Max and the Curse of Brotherhood, which I enjoyed, and we'll talk about that as well. Maybe the more remarkable thing that I have to talk about is that I got Murdered Soul Suspect on Steam, but I wanted to play it in the living room. So I brought home the laptop that I use at work, and instead of running the game off the laptop, which is not as powerful as my desktop, I am playing the game using Steam in-home streaming, which and actually works really well.
Really?
I'm kind of like stoked on this now. And I don't know if it's just because of the machine that I'm using is, you know, like a full-blown PC.
Yeah.
But I started digging into this a little deeper. And from what I understand, pretty much the requirements for doing the streaming is that the stream is encoded as like H.264. And then you just need a machine that can have the Steam client installed on it, right? So it's kind of interesting in the sense that there are some pretty low barriers for some devices that currently don't have this technology, which I feel like should. For example, the Roku. You know, the Roku device has like a USB port on it, and it can encode or decode streaming video, but it doesn't have Steam on it. So I think really what would make this a killer application is if Steam produced like an ARM-based version of the Steam platform, and then you could just use that as a dumb terminal to stream your gameplay.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's really cool, and so I'm running it. Obviously, I'm running it in big picture mode. The interface is really good for helping you find your game, and then it's really simple to figure out if you want to stream it from your local machine, the client machine, or from your external machine. So it's really easy to say, you know, I want to stream it off of my desktop, or I want to play directly off of my laptop or whatever. But it works really well. It looks great. I'm running Murdered Soul Suspect in 720p because I ran it in 1080 and I honestly couldn't tell the difference other than frame rate. So it looks great. And I don't even know that it's, nothing ever clues me into the fact like, oh, this is something that's streaming over my network. It just seems like I'm present with the game, which is really cool.
That is cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know when Steam makes announcements, but I'm really hoping that they announce something soon, because I looked into this issue a little deeper about streaming. And so, you know, NVIDIA has their Shield streaming, which is Android based, right? So somebody wrote sort of the open source version of the Steam game streaming technology, which you can install on any Android device, right? So, for example, probably the most accessible thing would be like, I could take an Ouya and go to the Ouya marketplace and install this APK, which is called Limelight. And you can use Limelight on Ouya essentially as a NVIDIA Shield device without it actually being an NVIDIA Shield. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that does include Steam games to the extent that, you know, that technology is supported by the game or whatever. So I just think it's really fascinating because I've been really wanting to play a lot of the games on my PC, but I don't want to sit at my PC because that's what I do at work all day.
Yeah.
So finding ways to get those out to the couch without having to run like a really long, cord for the controller and a really long cord for the HDMI or whatever. Like, this seems to be a viable solution. And I think that getting it on something smaller, like a Roku, would be like really like a killer app for Steam. So I hope they're working on a like an ARM-based version of that or an Android-based version.
Very cool.
Anyways, that's my weird technology non-gaming related update. So Matt, what's going on?
Well, I was, as we know from the last episode, I've been traveling all week. I just got back a day ago, and my wife and I have been catching up on Arrow, kind of binge watching Arrow. She watched up to episode 18 of season 1, which is where I was at before I got home, and then when I got home we watched all 5 episodes, final episodes of the season, and then started season 2. We got like 2 episodes into season 2.
Nice.
Or 1.
My wife's watching it right now too.
It is really good. I have to admit.
Shocking, right?
They've done some awesome things. They took a lot of creative license with some of the characters, which I actually don't really care about that much.
Yeah.
Because some of them by name exist in the DC universe, but they're like different people in the Arrow show, essentially. Mm-hmm. Or they'll take like a character and then make a different person into that character than maybe is in the... they twist the logic a little bit on some of that stuff, but mm-hmm. done well enough that I don't really care. So it's really entertaining. There's something I was going to say about... Oh, so and no spoilers, but a character named Slade shows up in the island version of the show, right? Mm-hmm. At some point. And for everybody that knows, and Ash, I think you know who he is. I think mm-hmm. anybody probably knows who he is if you look even 1 second into it. But I really love how they are teasing that character out. It's kind of amazing because mm-hmm. I'm nothing but anxiety over when they're going to finally reveal it and what's going to happen in the story because he is such a great character overall in the comic book universe. I'm really thinking that it's going to be pretty awesome, and I from what I understand, season 2 is when he gets revealed.
I promise you will not be disappointed. They do a really good job with it.
So I'm really excited about that. The show is really good. I think a bunch of listeners have been keying us in on the fact that it's a really
good show. I
think
our listeners kind of prompted us to watch this. I know a bunch of people were saying, like Justin Banks and stuff, were saying we had to get on this. So thank you guys for suggesting it.
It's great. Really loving it. Spent the week in San Francisco. Was mostly at the convention center pretty much the entire time, so I didn't really get to meet up with a lot of people that I wanted to, but I saw a couple of friends. Did a little bit of exploring. Got threatened by my life threatened by a homeless man. That was fun.
Wow.
Also had a homeless man sing a full song to me, which was the same day and kind of amazing in a totally different way. But either way, you know, whatever, nothing bad happened. And then I was going to wrap up a couple thoughts on WWDC. I did. So Monday, when you heard me talking about it, I was on about 3 hours of sleep and had barely seen one or two sessions. And jokingly, not even really jokingly, I'd written Scott later when we were going to get ready to put the episode up. And I was like, I honestly don't even remember what I said.
Yeah.
I was pretty out of it.
I think both of you kind of came back with me like, oh, I don't even really remember recording that episode. How did it go? And I'm like, it actually turned out fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I was out of it too. So.
Yeah.
But if you know me, you know I don't really drink the Apple Kool-Aid a whole lot. I enjoy some of their – I'm recording on a MacBook right now, and you know I have an iPad that I love. But I'm not like – I'm not an all-or-nothing kind of guy on any of the platforms.
Right.
But I will say after sitting – I sat in on three different game sessions, so kind of like how to make a game in iOS. One talked about – Scene Kit, one talked about Sprite Kit, one was kind of like the opener to the whole thing. Like, you know, it was called like Ingredients to Making Good Games. It was a really interesting take. They talked about a few different games. Two that came up, one was Cut the Rope, and they're talking about Cut the Rope because it was how they intro into the game. Yeah, so kind of how you learn the mechanics of the game is sort of intuitive and done well enough that even though they're prompting you, you don't feel like you're like forever in tutorial land, essentially.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then they talked about the Ridiculous Fishing, and that game, they were like all over that game, although I think it won a design award when it came out 2 years ago at iOS. But they were talking about that game and just how great the mechanics are in, and how the game lives up to the way you play it, sort of like the idea of how to design this game. And it was a really interesting talk. I'm pretty sold on it. I liked how their tools are. I think it's a really good time to be an indie developer, to be honest, with things like Unity and with these new things coming out for iOS. And I know Microsoft's pushing stuff through Unity pretty hard. It seems like a pretty decent time to be making these things. It seems like there's a lot of tools out there.
Seems very accessible.
Yeah, a lot of tools, a lot of information, and if you want to make something, it feels very doable. You know, like get a couple friends together that have like a varied skill set and go to town kind of thing. So it was really interesting. I also did a bunch of stuff for web, which is totally boring for this podcast, so I won't talk about it. But the game stuff was really cool, and I thought I'd bring up that while I may have seemed a little down on day one.
I don't think you were really negative about it, though. I think you were just tired.
I was tired. I never liked the keynote, honestly. And I rarely like keynotes from any company because it's so like rah, rah, you know, drinking the juice kind of thing. And I hate that stuff. It really gets to me. I'm like, yeah, great. Like I get the same way when we go to PAX. If we go to like some of the big guys, you know, main panels or something, I'll get that way after E3 when they do, Sony does theirs and Microsoft does theirs. Like, it's just so stupid. It's like, ignore the fact that anyone else exists. We're the only thing that matters, you know? And you're like, okay, sure, guys. But overall, it was a good conference. And like I said, the gaming thing really was inspiring and pretty neat. I also did get to see they did a Star Wars retrospective panel and had Dave Filoni come out and talk about his path in his career and how he went from basically making a show that I absolutely loved, which was called Mission Hill, to ending up being the senior director of Star Wars animated universe at this point, right?
Yeah.
So he's the head of Rebels. He was the head of Clone Wars.
Such a cool guy, too.
He told the story about how when he got hired to do Clone Wars, he had never done anything in 3D at all, and basically told them that they were like, "Why are you hiring me? Like this is stupid. I'm at no way qualified to do this." And they were like, "Well, just come meet George. You know, like we'll go from there." And he said he went to meet George. And, you know, he said he flipped through his portfolio like it was like water. It was just like, yeah, okay, cool. Like going through the whole thing. He said he walked out of the office just relieved that it was over. Like, oh, thank God. I'm like that. I got to meet George Lucas. I got to come to the ranch. Now I can move on with my life. And he was working on Avatar, Last Airbender at the time.
Oh, that's right.
He's like,
yeah.
I can go back to Nickelodeon and just work on Avatar and ignore that this ever happened. You know, just be happy that it happened. And the woman came back out. She was like, "Oh, Dave, hey, Dave, hold on a second." And he was like, "Oh, what?" She was like, "George liked you. You got the job." And he said he just looked at her and was like, "No," and like kind of walked out of the building. So he told one of the other funny bits, and I'll move on. But one of the other funny bits that he told was that when the woman called to tell him that Star Wars or Lucas was interested in having him come out for this Clone Wars role, she called. He had never heard of her before. She's like, "Hi, I'm looking for Dave Filoni." He's like, "That's me." And she's like, "Hey, this is I think Karen from Lucas. We'd like to bring you out to interview for senior director of the Clone Wars series." And he was like, "Series? That was a movie."
She's like,
"Well, yes, we're aware, but we're doing a series, and we'd like to have you come out, you know, meet with the team, meet with George, and see if you'd like the job and see if we like you." And he's like, he said his first thought was he worked across the hall from the guys that do SpongeBob. He was like, "If you've ever known who those guys are," he's like, "they're all comedians, they're all weird, and they all love to pull pranks on people." He's like, "I was convinced that this woman who I'd never heard of, talking about a series that I had never heard of being made, was a prank from the SpongeBob guys." So he literally went, "Yeah, okay, lady." And she's like, "Well, we'd love to meet you." He's like, "Yeah, I'm sure. I would love to meet you, too." And she's like, "Okay." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, okay. Who put you up to this?" And she was like, "No one put me up to this. This is Carrie from Lucas. We'd like," and he's like, "Right, okay, sure. Yeah, let's meet. Where do you want to meet?" And she goes, "I think we're getting off on the wrong foot. Carrie from Lucas. We're calling because we're doing a Clone Wars series, and we'd like to have you come out and direct or interview for directing the show." And he said he waited for a second, and then he asked her something. I forget what he asked, and all of a sudden, he realized this was real.
Oh, shit. And
not at all the SpongeBob guy. And she goes, "So do you want to come out?" He's like, "Yeah, I do. I do want to come out. I do absolutely would love to come out and meet you guys." And she's like, "Okay, that's great." He goes, "And then I said this." And he goes, "And this is the most wrong thing I could probably say in that moment." He said, he told her that this is great because right now he's making Jedi costumes to go to see the third edition of the prequels in the theaters dressed as a Jedi. And he said she went dead silent on the phone and then just went, "That's nice. So we'll see you out here on..."
Oh man.
And he said after he got hired, he was talking to her later about it, and she was like, "I'm really glad I went against every intuition in my body not to bring you out after you said all that stuff."
Oh man.
Had you come out anyways, because it was like everything wrong that he could possibly do on the phone call.
That's amazing.
And then he got hired, and you know, Clone Wars was awesome, and now he's doing Rebels, which they showed a really quick peek of, and it looks pretty awesome. And you know, the funniest part about it was the first thing he said when he came out on stage. He was like, "Hi, I'm really happy to be here." He's like, "You know, I always get nervous for these things. I'm going to kind of just improv. I've got some slides and movies or clips that I'll show you of kind of how I became a fan and all the stuff." He's like, "Also, I just want to get this out of the way right away. I don't have anything for the new series of the movies. I'm not allowed to talk about it. I don't have anything to show you. If that's why you're here, you might as well get up and walk out right now because it's going to be an hour full of nothing about that." And he looked over at, I guess, the PR people from Lucas were there. He's like, "Is that good?" And they all kind of shook their head yes. He's like, "Okay, cool. Let's move on." So it was really good. It was a pretty inspirational talk and pretty awesome to hear how basically a gigantic fan of a series ended up being one of their main people, you know. It was a cool speech. So it was a little WWDC wrap up. I thought I'd talk about it since
cool.
It was a neat experience and not a lot of people get to go to that convention. So
awesome.
It was cool. Do you know what else is cool, guys?
What's
I'm
gonna
that? Transition cool. myself.
News.
They found a director for Ant-Man.
What?
Is it cool?
I don't know. Ash, you like Bring It On, right?
Well, let's talk about Bring It On for a minute. So the director for Ant-Man has been chosen, at least for now, and it is Peyton Reed, who directed Bring It On.
And Yes Man.
I don't even know what that movie is.
It's a Jim Carrey movie.
Oh, mercy. So I do like Bring It On. And Bring It On, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Bring It On was sort of like my, if I'm depressed and like got in a fight with a loved one and I want to feel good about myself, I'll watch a little Bring It On. But is it a good film? Not entirely. Oh, no, it's not a great film. And I'm just going to be a dick here, but nor do I think the direction for Bring It On is all that great. I've been reading a little bit about this, and a lot of people have pointed out a lot of the people that they've chosen to direct these Marvel films haven't really ever directed anything like a Marvel film before. Yeah. So if you look at Favreau, and if you look at Kenneth Branagh, and you really examine their past work, you'll see that there's really nothing like these big, giant tentpole action films, which leads me to believe that, when the producer and the rest of the team is being put together, that they really kind of, they pick people that can forge these films into something pretty magical. So, at the end of the day, how much influence and how much power does Peyton Reed really have? I don't really know, but my gut feeling is bad decision.
I have a new feeling about this though.
Okay.
I'm wondering if Edgar Wright was trying to make it more of an action movie than they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Or more dark, at least, than they wanted it to be, because the people that they went after Edgar Wright are all like comedy people. Like Peyton Reed didn't only do Bring It On, he also worked with Upright Citizens Brigade. He worked with I think he did some episodes of, I was just looking the other day, did some episodes of New Girl. Like he's like a comedy dude, and he comes from a comedy too, background, right? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And then they signed on Adam McKay to do Punch Up on the script, which usually means he's going to add jokes and flavor to the script that they feel maybe a little flat. I'm wondering if they just if Marvel is like straight aimed at this is going to be a comedy, like an action comedy, and Edgar Wright was trying to make it a little more serious, maybe like Ultimates feeling version.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's confusing because it's weird to see. Like, I think we all thought, oh, well, they want somebody more actiony, or they wanted to dumb it down or something, and maybe dumb it down is still correct, but like this, it's a weird choice. It's a weird direction to head, I feel like. Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
But the timeline at this point is brutal. I mean, it's going to be out like what, next summer or something to that effect. I want to see.
Yeah, I mean,
is it
July? They should be heading to post soon, right? I mean, is really how they should be going.
I mean, I pity whoever, I mean, it's just going to be a pretty breakneck at this point to get it all done.
Yeah.
But I mean, stranger things have happened. It could end up being pretty good, but who knows?
This is 3 weeks in a row, by the way, of talking about a comic book movie. I'm proud of us, guys.
I know, for real. For real.
There's some other good news that came out. It's really kind of fun and interesting. And if you're me, it's kind of amazing. There's a comic strip called Pearl. Oh Jesus! Hold on.
Pearls.
Pearls Before Swine. I was gonna say Pearls and Swine, and I knew it wasn't that. And it's been long running. It's been in the paper for quite a while. And the guy who created it, Steven Pastis, I think is how you pronounce his last name.
Okay.
Is a much like myself, a gigantic fan of Bill Waters, who created Calvin and Hobbes, which is like singly probably one of the biggest influences on my life. Period. I read it religiously. I still have the last one that came out in the paper. I have the big hardcover collected series. I kickstarted the documentary about the movie. Like I'm a gigantic fan. Well, apparently a little while ago, Steven, the creator of Pearls Before Swine, sent a comic strip and a note to Bill Waters. He made this comic strip where he's at a bar with a girl, and the girl's like, oh, what do you do? He's like, oh, I draw comic strips. She's like, is it anything I would have heard of? And he goes, have you ever heard of Calvin and Hobbes? And then the next scene is him in bed with her, and he's like, that was really wrong, is like the line he says. And so he sent that to Bill Waters along with a note saying, you were a huge influence in my life. Thank you so much. Now, Bill Waters is like a recluse. Like he does not – there's only one known picture of him in the world. He never surfaces. He basically made Calvin and Hobbes and then just kind of disappeared. And as it got more famous, he pulled back more, and eventually that's just decided to end it. So Bill Watterson wrote him back and said – was flattered, said that was a great – it was funny. I like that. He was like, I've got an idea. Would you want to work on a comic strip? And Steven Pastis wrote back and said, I would light myself on fire if you wanted me to. you tell me what you want and I will do it. So then began a process. They ended up doing three strips where there was this character named Libby who he called Lib, which if you look at backwards is Bill. And Libby is a second grade girl who takes over drawing his comic strip. So he put out three strips, each having a panel or two that actually was done by Bill Watterson. And I put a link in the notes, show notes, but we'll try to attach it to the site too. And they're pretty awesome if you go read them. There's three different ones. The style changes completely. The sense of humor is really funny and kind of self-deprecating. But I definitely encourage reading it. And if you were a Calvin and Hobbes fan at all, it's pretty neat to see these panels again, because it's just so distinctly Bill Watterson. And there's a scene, there's one panel where there's a Martian attack, and it's like straight out of Calvin and Hobbes, and it's pretty awesome. So I don't know if you guys were big fans growing up, but I definitely was, and I thought this news was pretty cool. And basically the creator said, you know, the one caveat was he had to keep it a secret until after all the panels had come out. He wasn't allowed to say anything ahead of time. So now that all the panels have come out, he finally gets to announce that he got to work with Bill Watterson, and three of those panels were done by him.
That's really cool.
It's super cool.
I was a big fan growing up too. I remember sitting there for hours and hours and hours and just reading like Something Under the Bed Is Drooling, like over and yeah. over again. So good.
Yeah. The stuff, it was so like adult, but it never talked down to kids, which I think is what's amazing about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I spent a lot of time by myself as a kid, and it was just about a kid with an overactive imagination. And
yeah,
I was a lot like Calvin, just making stuff up and going out and causing chaos and building forts. And it really was kind of a little story about, I felt like it was really speaking to me, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. That's awesome. So check it out. We'll try to include it in the notes, and you can see some Bill Watterson magic again.
Cool.
In our last bit of news, CD Projekt Red, who is the company that makes The Witcher, and their sister site, Good Old Games, they called it a summer conference, but it was really just like a half an hour live stream, which after I watched it, I really appreciated their approach to doing an announcement, like in comparison to everything else you're going to see this week. You know, it was very like, it was literally like two guys in jeans and t-shirts standing in front of a black curtain with like a flat screen TV in between them, and they just talked for like a half an hour, and like all the information was just sort of given out very bluntly. It's like, here's the info, here's what we're doing, here's what happens next. So anyways, that out of the way, let's talk about what they actually revealed in this summer conference. So they started with The Witcher 3, which is obviously a huge game that's coming out. They announced
not to cut you off, but did you see that trailer yet?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah. I'm so excited for that game. Oh my God.
It's looking good, right?
It looks gorgeous.
Let's see. What was I going to say about...
Sorry.
No.
I got excited.
No, you're fine. And Charles Dance is the king or something, right? Or the emperor.
Which is
awesome. It's so awesome. So anyways, they announced a formal release date for The Witcher 3, which is going to be February 24th, 2015. Everyone had kind of, you know, there were rumors about a February date, but they made it official. And then they revealed the exclusive edition and all the goodies and everything that you'll get with the game. So your digital map and your soundtrack and all kinds of stuff. Like there's a physical version that has this statue of Geralt battling a griffin, which is crazy looking. They showed at the end of the conference, they showed like a sort of a making of video of that, which is really cool. And then they kind of transitioned from The Witcher 3 into sort of the distribution platform, which is Good Old Games. So as far as the Good Old Games announcement go, they revealed a product called GOG Galaxy, which is they describe as their DRM-free online gaming platform, which is completely optional. So I think what they're sort of doing is they're taking a couple of jabs at Steam, right? So their sort of position on games throughout their whole process with GOG has been, you pay for the games, you can download them DRM-free, you can do whatever you want with them, you don't have to worry about what happens if the service goes down, you know, at some point in the distant future or whatever. So. Uh-huh. So they announced basically like what sounds like a Steam client for Good Old Games, which is completely optional, which you can use if you want to.
Yeah.
And sort of the kicker about this is that they're designing it to be with a feature they call crossplay, which would allow you to play a game that you purchase on Good Old Games along with people that purchased that same game on Steam. So cross-platform multiplayer between Good Old Games and Steam. So they took a couple of, I guess, a couple of jabs at Steam in this. And then they also announced that if you decide to purchase Witcher 3 on Good Old Games, you currently get a 10% discount, so you can pre-order the game for $53.99 in the U.S. And then, like, almost immediately on Steam, you can go to Steam right now, and they're selling the pre-order for 15% off, so it's $50.99, right? So you see where this is going, right?
Uh-huh. Good.
Yeah. Competition is good for the consumer. You know, like we keep saying, you don't have to pick a side, because as long as there are multiple sides, the consumer ultimately is going to win in this equation, which is why we get free games on Xbox and PlayStation. So
yes.
So yeah, that's what's going on right now with Good Old Games and CD Projekt Red. They also announced a Witcher board game, which I think they call like Witcher Adventure. And that it's called the Witcher Adventure game, which is going to be a digital board game that they are opening beta access to, currently only on Good Old Games. And I think if you go to like goodoldgames.com or gog.com/galaxy, I think there's a place there you can put in your email address to sign up for the beta. If you pre-order a copy of Witcher 3 on GOG, you get two beta keys automatically, one for you and one for a friend. And I think that's it. That's a lot of the highlights. So there's just a lot of big stuff coming from that company. And, you know, like I said, competition ultimately will benefit the consumer. And obviously we're all excited for The Witcher anyways. And we're going to play it on Xbox One. So I'm glad you guys are finding it out on PC, but that's where we'll be. Right? Am I right? We're going to get on Xbox One. Right?
Probably. More than likely. Probably. Yeah.
So there you go.
Awesome. Okay, so I went and saw Edge of Tomorrow, which is a Tom Cruise sci-fi movie, which there seems to be one of these every year.
Yeah, he's but, all about the action sci-fi, isn't he?
He is, and I never actually saw Oblivion.
Oh, I liked it.
What? I thought it was pretty Oblivion was good.
I never saw it. Movie. I need to see it. But Edge of Tomorrow is about Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt in the not-so-distant future. I'd say, judging by the technology, it's probably 10 to 15 years in the future, so we're not talking like super... you know, super future. We're talking not so distant future. And it's about an alien invasion on Earth that the story kind of picks up, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but the story picks up about a few years after the aliens land on Earth, and they're kind of consuming everything in sight, and they're sort of just rolling over Europe and just murdering everything. And you can kind of mentally, you can easily see them as like the Reapers or aliens from the movie Alien or the Zerg. They're just kind of flooding over everything and consuming everything in sight, and basically they're very bad news. Tom Cruise plays this character who is in the United States military, and he works more or less with the propaganda department, so he's never seen real combat at all. And this is not something that they really tell you about in the trailer. He's like a total coward. He's a bit of a wuss, and he ends up pissing off the wrong person, and the wrong person says, well, you know what? I don't care if you're in the United States military. I'm basically making you part of, like, the D-Day invasion against these aliens, and he's going to be one of the first waves in, and he doesn't have any choice, and they tell you this in the trailer, but on the first wave in, he and basically everybody else in the entire army, mankind's last stand, they all get wiped out. They all get wiped out horribly, and you get to see it all unfold. The invasion is unbelievable looking. Some of the best like military combat I've seen on screen in a very long time. And really, in all honesty, it reminded me a lot of a film like Aliens. Bill Paxton is in the film.
Oh.
Yes, and he's fucking awesome. He plays the role of essentially Apone in Alien. So he's like the gruff sergeant, you know, with all the funny one-liners. So Bill Paxton's in it, and he's great. But the thing that makes this film different is when Tom Cruise dies, he wakes up where he started the day before. And I'm not going to tell you why that happens or what really unfolds after that, but it's really, really well done. the reason why he time jumps and the reason why and the way he relives each day is really, really amazing. It's sort of like Groundhog Day meets Saving Private Ryan meets Aliens.
Totally. That's exactly what I think of.
Yes. So it's really cool. As a standalone military film, it would have been a lot of fun. But the adding these time jumps really makes the script feel smart and feel very different. So it's not just a straight up war film. There's a lot of like really neat sci-fi going on as well. Emily Blunt plays a war hero. She sort of becomes the icon for the British Army because she's survived more battles than everybody else. And basically she's like the ultimate badass. And Emily Blunt in this film is like unfucking believable. She's so great. And some of the standout things I think that you guys would really dig, the technology in this, while I said it's only, you know, 10, 15, maybe 20 years in the future, all the soldiers fight in these kind of biomechanical suits. They're not mechs, but they're sort of like harnesses.
Power suits or something?
Yeah, power suits. Yeah. And so they can carry more weapons. They can carry heavier armaments and basically makes them tougher because their opponents are so like unbelievably brutal and fast. So all the soldiers are really like super tough and they have these amazing weapons and it's just a really fun film to watch because it's so visually it's very, very different. The guy that directed it, Doug Liman, he did the Born Identity movies and he did like I want to say Swingers was his was his first movie. But really, really well shot and I loved this movie. It was probably one of my favorite movies that I've seen in the theater this year. I think everything that X-Men did wrong with time travel, this movie did right with time travel.
Cool. Oh, wow. I feel like you need to go watch Oblivion now because it's I mean, like, obviously the plot is not the same, but it's like action sci-fi with weird, you know, kind of mind-bending things that are happening in it, and I don't know. It sounds like it'd be right for you for sure.
Yeah.
Like, no. Just like I saw Oblivion, I want to see this movie. You saw this movie. I think you should go see Oblivion.
Yeah, I definitely. And I really think seeing this on the big screen would be of service to you guys because it has these really big, big, big battle scenes, you know, huge in scale. And I think seeing it on a big screen would be great. So definitely awesome. Go check out Edge of Tomorrow. I couldn't recommend it enough.
It sounds like you're kind of saying it might be like maybe a little above a popcorn film, like not just a popcorn film.
No, it's one that I will probably buy when it comes out.
Like, awesome.
I liked it that really much. I think that the acting was great. All the side characters, they did a really good job of like making the supporting cast actually likable and interesting. Like, he goes in with this platoon of characters, and since he relives the day over and over again, you get to kind of know little bits and pieces about them because you get to see the day loop over and over again. So you know, by the end of the film, he knows these people. He's lived the same day, I don't even know, hundreds of times. And so, you know, he gets to learn from his mistakes, and he learns where each one of the aliens is on the battlefield and how to, you know, counteract them. And they put out this big strategy board, and it's just really well written and well constructed. And I feel like writing a script like that would be a huge challenge because it's almost like putting a puzzle together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely love this movie. And I would love to see a sequel to it if that were possible.
Awesome. Now I'm really stoked on it. That's great.
Yeah, it's really good.
Cool.
So let's.
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on me. Like, so now I'm excited to see it as well.
Yeah, me too. Let's talk for a minute about Wolf Among Us.
Yeah, I will attempt to be spoiler free because I know no one here has actually played all four of them already.
I'm not caught up.
But I have beaten all four chapters that are out so far of Wolf Among Us. I played it on iPad. I still highly recommend it on iPad. It actually makes me think I'm going to go do series two of Walking Dead on the iPad as well. Cause it's no.
Well, I mean, you just won't have any of your save data if that matters to you.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Just maybe something to consider. I'll replay otherwise series one. No, I don't know.
Maybe there's like a way to, I don't know if there's like kind of like, you know, they had Mass Effect comics to help you make your choices.
Yeah,
maybe they have something like that in the iPad version of season two.
I'll have to look. I don't know. Yeah. But I just really enjoy the playstyle above the controller and the TV.
Awesome.
Plus you put headphones on, feels kind of, you know,
a little close. More immersive.
Yeah.
It's kind of like interactive fiction anyway. So wouldn't it make sense to be like physically closer to it? Like you're reading a book sort of.
And it just really works. I have one of the smallest complaints ever created about a game.
Okay.
It's the only thing I found wrong with it. Bloody Mary is in the game as a character.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And her voice actress is awesome, but she's like so quiet in the actual audio of the game that,
oh really,
I honestly don't even hear her for like 50% of what she says. I was like sitting there like I hear everybody else totally fine, and then she would talk and I'm like holding my hands over my headphones to try to like press them as hard as I can against my ears with the volume all the way up, and she has this like really kind of low like sociopath voice, and oh, okay. It's like just
maybe
done
the audio
in a way
wasn't mixed correctly or something.
Yeah, it's done in a way where it feels like it gets buried. I don't know, but otherwise the game is amazing. I don't really know that I need to sell it to anybody, but like if you read Fables at all, it is such awesome material from that comic that I you definitely should play it if you read Fables and enjoyed Fables. If you even enjoy that kind of like alternate take on Fables or stories, like this is right up your alley as well. All four chapters are done so well. Like I literally was tearing through them on the trip to like play it. Just the characters are amazing. I found myself playing Bigby Wolf. Like, so you play as the big bad wolf, and in the New York setting that he's in, he's called Bigby.
Mm-hmm.
And Bigby's the sheriff, and you're kind of walking around making sure that other fables are staying in line, doing the things they need to do. And essentially, like without breaking too much into it, shit goes kind of haywire and somebody dies very early on in the first chapter. Mm-hmm. And it just explodes from there all the way through the next four. And things keep getting worse and worse and like almost seemingly out of control while you're doing it. It is really awesome, the take that they did on like getting information and why you couldn't get it initially. I'm completely wrapped up in this story and cannot wait for the fifth chapter to come out.
Would you say the episodes are about the same length as The Walking Dead? Like for a Walking Dead episode, it might take you like 2 hours to finish an episode. Do you feel like that was about the same?
So I think they might be a hair shorter. I think they're about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Ish.
Oh, okay.
On the iPad for me, at least that's what I think about how long it was taking me. So over an hour, under two is what
you also said something really interesting that you said that you don't have to sell anybody on these games, but I think that raises an interesting question, which is how many of these Telltale game series can be sustained first of all by that company simultaneously, right? And second of all, how many of these types of games are people willing to play as a series, right? So you've got The Walking Dead, you've got Wolf Among Us, Tales of the Borderlands is coming out. They announced a Game of Thrones. Obviously people would like to see other things in this format like Battlestar Galactica or Firefly. So how many, you know, like what is the limit on this?
Well,
like you're playing your second series and you still have The Walking Dead season 2. Like where are you at right now with this?
So here's what I think is interesting about these games. Walking Dead, I have no tie to. I'm actually burned out on zombies, as I've talked about many times on the podcast. So playing season 2, it would be less because I'm really dying to play it and more because I really enjoy these games on the iPad, if that makes sense. Like they're really great traveling games and they're really fun and kind of like even couch games to an extent of being able to sit with your headphones on and just play through something. So to me, I think they can continually do this as long as they make a unique game based on the setting. Do you get what I'm saying?
And yeah, like, I see what you're saying.
I think they will sell well based on people's fatigue based around that setting or on people's excitement based around that setting. Like Game of Thrones will probably sell really well. I probably won't play it.
So like, you're saying maybe proper treatment of the content is the key to sustaining this series.
And I think that's what Telltale is doing so well, is that they made a Walking Dead game that felt like a Walking Dead game. Do you know what I mean? Like it,
absolutely,
the tone of the series, everything they did was like pitch perfect inside of it. And bones about it. There you go. I really enjoyed it. I tend to get really tired of zombie stuff quicker than maybe other people. And like what they did was really unique and really great. And the same with like Game of Thrones, same with Borderlands. I think these are all going to be really well made. As long as they're not stretching themselves too thin, mm-hmm. these games will be very well made, awesome storytelling, and you know, just done well all around. And I think the thing is the mechanic is not changing, right? So the more of them they make, those mechanics are going to get more and more fine-tuned. They're going to get better done. And over time, you're just like Wolf Among Us granted, different platform, so I can't really compare it directly, but I had very little issue with like some of the major issues I had with Series 1 of Walking Dead, which was like a hard time getting to get the, you know, the icon in the right place, or like every once in a while felt really jerky, like trying to get to somewhere walking or something like that felt weird. And like a lot of that got tuned up, I feel like, between Season 1 of Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us, and probably between Season 1 of Walking Dead and Season 2, for that matter. So to me, I feel like they can keep doing this as long as they keep making quality content that's true to the source.
Mm-hmm. Is it, and, is it still, what is it, like $5 an episode, or is there a season pass?
Yeah, I think it was 25. I bought the season pass for 20, I think, or something like that.
Oh, okay, cool.
And to me, what makes Fables so unique and fun is that it's a universe that has not been so overblown in pop culture that it's like freaking everywhere. Do you know what I mean? So like this kind of setting is not a normal, it's this weird alternate take on New York where there's fables living among us that are all like glamored into looking human, even though they're all still fables.
Yeah.
And they're basically running their own government inside of New York to manage the fables inside of New York. So it's this weird like second take on government and on politics, but based inside of this alternate fable setting. So it's like a thing that's not done a lot of places. And I think that's what's unique. I think the Borderlands one could be unique because while Borderlands is in a lot of places video game wise, it's not like it's a deeply explored universe that has like, you know, been, there's a TV show and there's a movie and there's, you know what I mean? Like that doesn't really, it's not so cross platform that they couldn't do something unique with the story.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing I'll ask is, like, for our listeners, let's say our listener is a fan of Once Upon a Time but is not familiar with Fables. Would they enjoy this game and or the comic?
If you've ever thought, like, man, if Once Upon a Time was, like, a little bit more bloody and serious, then this would be your Once Upon a Time that's, like, awesome. More gritty. This is way more gritty than Once Upon a Time. And lacks any feeling, not, and this is going to sound like a knock, I enjoy watching Once Upon a Time when I watch it with my wife, but it's not, it doesn't feel so Lindelof-y as Once Upon a Time does. This is much more based in as real of a world as it possibly could be. You know, there's magic and stuff like that, but it's not done to an extent that like breaks other laws of physics and stuff. It still kind of works.
Cool.
So it's gripping. It's written really well. If you like that alternate stuff, like Once Upon a Time, you would definitely like Fable. Read the comic for one, but also play Wolf Among Us. It's just I'm sold on Telltale for sure. They made another awesome series. So.
Cool,
great.
Yeah, Scott, how did your mail order bride go?
Yeah. Murder Soul Suspect. Okay, so I did actually get my Steam key, like I thought, and I got it on the international release date, which was Friday. So. Okay, so Murdered Soul Suspect is in many ways
the easiest title to say ever.
Right, yeah. First of all, it's kind of, there's not a lot. I would say there's not, it's a good idea, but there's not a lot that I feel as if is new that is introduced in this game. So basically the premise of the game is that you die at the beginning of the game, and then as a spirit, you are trying to uncover the mystery of your murder. This is largely, I would put this sort of in the genre of, like Heavy Rain, like an adventure game, interactive fiction, somewhere between, you know, Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls, and maybe even like L.A. Noire in some respects, except you don't get in cars and drive around and shoot at people.
Okay.
So it's a good game. I enjoy it, but it's really like, it's bizarre because it's, it starts you out sort of like you just hit the ground running. You literally hit the ground because you die. But you appear as a ghost, and then you immediately start like setting out to solve your case. And so it introduces you quickly to game mechanics like, oh, this is how you can look at evidence and you examine things. And as you might suspect, that you can possess people and read their thoughts. You can influence them to like reveal certain details to you while you're possessing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of in the way of a L.A. Noire style, like you collect all this evidence and then at a certain point you decide that you're ready to like answer a particular question that you have in your case. So you go to do this, and it brings up all of the evidence that you've collected so far, and you need to kind of like pick the most relevant aspects that then reveal the next part of the story to you. And that's basically the whole flow of the game that I've experienced so far. And I think that I've played about a third of this game. Okay, so that's all the normal stuff, right? And now there's some really weird stuff that happens in this game. There's also a mechanic where there are evil demon spirits that are floating around that you have to, like, it seems like for no reason these things exist in the game, because pretty much all they serve to do is if they capture you, you kind of die and then you get restarted at a checkpoint. But this is not like a shooter. So dying and restart, like, you're just collecting evidence and solving answers. This is really more of an interactive kind of narrative, noir kind of whodunit, yeah, mystery investigation thing, right? So it puts this mechanic in the game where you can hide within like this soul residue, which is scattered throughout the environment, and you hide within the soul residue, right? And then the demon...
Let's talk about soul residue.
Yeah, right? I don't know what exactly they call it, but there's you. You're a spirit. You're You have some kind of existence on this plane, right? And then there's sort of a lesser existence, maybe like a resonance or something, and you can somehow hide in that.
Okay.
And the demons can't find you, and then you can kind of jump out, and then from behind you're supposed to execute them, right? So that's that mechanic is
like
in the game.
It's all a metaphor.
It's not. I mean, it sounds weird while I'm explaining it, but it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't have a great place within this game to have something like that.
You feel
right?
Like maybe it was just added to add longevity to the title, or?
Yeah, because you'll go through an environment. Like, I went into a church and then I collected all this evidence. I was looking for somebody. I found this person. As I'm leaving the church, these demon spirits are now like in the main part of the cathedral, and I need to kind of soul hop around to dispatch these two spirits. And then I just leave. Like, I go on my way and nothing else in the story has been revealed, and that's it. I've also encountered a second really bizarre game mechanic, which is the game takes place in Salem. So you're walking around in Salem, and there are the game is full of collectibles to the point of being exhausting. Like, there are so many things that you have to find and collect in this game. And so when you're walking through the city, there are things that are hidden in places that you cannot physically get to. And the way that you get to them is by possessing a cat. So there is literally like a cat parkour gameplay mechanic in this game where you take, I'm not joking, you take possession of a cat, and the cat like kind of like jumps up to things and kind of like jumps from a railing to a banister to like a ledge that's really high up. And then you can dispossess the cat, collect the thing that you want, possess the cat again, and then go back down, right? The funniest thing that I've seen about this game mechanic, I know. The funniest thing I've seen about this game mechanic is that they gave the cat the ability to vertically climb walls that have vines on it. So literally, like, there's an animation in the game where the cat climbs vines, like Altair would climb a building or something, right? It's crazy. And it really just seems like it only serves a purpose of, hey, we put some collectibles on the rooftop and we need you to go get them, you know, like something like that.
Do you know who developed this?
Yeah, it's Airtight Games. And the game that I think that I played last from them was Quantum Conundrum.
Quantum Conundrum, yeah.
But I don't know if this is a Kim Swift joint or if this is like the studio at large, you know?
Kim Swift joint.
But like my real, okay, so those mechanics are like whatever. And while you're walking around Salem, you also meet other people like side quests, and they go, oh, you know, my spirit is still here. Like, I can't move on. Can you please just help me solve this little mystery? And there's like mini investigations you do, and all that stuff is great and everything. But the real problem I have with the game is that the game, I feel like, does not do a good enough job of pulling you, the player, into the story to have some sort of agency as the character that you are, like your avatar in the game.
Yeah.
Like, basically, this, like, the game starts with this character dying, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to care about why he died and who murdered him.
I was about to ask you that. I'm like, do you even care that you were murdered? I mean, that's the thing.
That's the real problem, because a lot of the game's backstory is told through you finding these collectibles. So, like, this guy had a wife. You find these collectibles, and as you find the collectibles, a lot of it is just text, too. So you need to be motivated, right, to go and read this text and figure out what happened. Every level also has a small set of physical collectibles that you have to find. And when you find them all, you can reveal a story about that environment, which is basically told through voice only, through audio. So it shows a still image of the thing that you found with like a 5-minute voiceover of this like story that you hear about in the game, which is kind of disappointing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think would have made this game much more effective in pulling the player into the game would have been for you as the player to go through sort of the tutorial as the game while you were still alive, right? So they could have put you as a cop on an investigation where you solve some kind of easy mystery and they show you how to investigate evidence and put it all together. And then, like, right after that, the thing that leads to your death could have happened and then you could have died and you would have been like, oh, cool, now I'm dead. And, like, this is a cool mechanic because now I'm a ghost and I need to figure out what's going on, right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is a problem I think that a lot of games have, and it's one of the things when we finally talk about Watch Dogs, I'll talk about this as well, but it feels like sometimes developers are afraid to just let the game have a story. They want to just get straight to the mechanics and straight to people doing stuff, but I think, you know, games have gotten to the point where we expect a little bit more. We expect some depth. We expect to care about what's happening, and, you know, one of the things that you just mentioned about Murder Soul Suspect is like, well, I would actually want to play this game if I was motivated to solve the murder. And if you have no motivation to actually solve the murder, it's like, well, then why the fuck am I running around as a parkour cat? You know, like, what's the point of all this?
Yeah.
It's that idea of forced narrative where they're like, oh, you care about this. And you're like, what? Like, no, you've given me zero reason to care about this. Why would I care?
So, yeah. It's really hard. Like, they don't, you know, I feel like there's something that could have been done, but, you know, your character dies because he gets thrown out of like a third story window and then the killer comes up and shoots you a couple of times. He like kind of fills your body with bullets and then you're dead, right? So, but sort of in lieu of that, nothing happens before that that connects me to the character so that I go like, yes, I want to do this, you know?
Right.
Pretty much my personal motivation for playing this game is that I just happen to like these kinds of games, right? You know, like, I like Heavy Rain and The Last of Us, or I mean, Heavy Rain and, what the hell is the other one called? The newer one.
Beyond?
Two Souls?
Yeah, Beyond Two Souls, sorry.
No, it's Beyond Two Souls.
Beyond Two Souls.
Beyond.
And, you know, like, L.A. Noire. Like, I like those kind of mechanics. And, oh, the other thing that's weird is that, unfortunately, this game suffers from almost the opposite weird game mechanic that L.A. Noire suffered from. Whereas, like, in L.A. Noire, you'd go into an investigation, you'd be interrogating somebody, right? And sometimes you need to have a piece of evidence, but the connection between the evidence and catching them in the lie was, like, not always intuitive. This game is in the opposite direction, where you'll go to answer a question about your investigation, and the answer, the actual right answer, is so obvious that you think, oh, that can't actually be what it is they're looking for. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
like, right. And then you pick something else that you think like, oh, I think this will help me answer the question. They go, oh, no, that's wrong. And then you go back and you pick the right thing. Pretty much there's no, you can't fail in this game, which is fine. And I get it. But like at one point I was asked to find the girl. I was trying to figure out how to get to the church. Right. And there was the investigative question pops up with this interface and it goes, now what piece of evidence would I have that would link the girl to the, you know, where she went? And pretty much my two choices were some photos that a cop found while he was doing his investigation of the girl with the priest standing in front of the church. And then there was another piece of evidence that I uncovered via cutscene, which was like this ghostly apparition of her having a conversation with somebody being like, oh, you should come to the church where it's safe. And I was like, oh, well, like the rational part of me thinks that it should be the photos because it's a girl standing in front of the church. No, it was the cutscene you unlocked where she says, I'm going to the church. And like, that was the piece of evidence that you needed to reveal, like, you know, did the girl go to the church? Oh, yes. Here's the, you know, like the cutscene that where the girl says, I'm going to the church. It's like so obvious, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like, if there was a definition of like a solid C+, like I feel like this game is kind of it. Like I want to finish it. I'm going to keep playing it. But like many other reviews have stated, this was sort of a great premise that is never like sort of the potential of what you could do with a premise like this is like lost, unfortunately.
So out of 57 parkour cats, how many parkour cats?
Out of 57 parkour cats, I would probably give it, you know, 37 parkour cats.
Okay.
Okay.
And I would say that this game would only be for people that enjoy adventure games such as, you know, Beyond or like L.A. Noir. Like, it's set in Salem, so if you're into, like, I don't know, Salem. Like, you know, Anna might like this game because she's really into Salem. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, that's maybe that's who this game is for. So,
yes.
So, wait. Are we going to get cats in our artwork 2 weeks in a row?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Parkour cat. Murdered soul suspect.
No.
Yes. Breaking Ashes rules. I think if we have cats 3 episodes in a row, right, that's there's like some demon will come out of the podcast. Like, we've summoned the mystical demon.
It'd be amazing.
Anyway.
I felt dirty typing cats into Google. I was like, oh.
Hey, but at least you know that if you need a cat photo from the internet, you'll find one.
Oh, yeah, it's you.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Max and the Curse of Brotherhood.
So this is a sequel to a game that I skipped 3 PAXes ago playing.
Really?
I realized, Max and the Magic Marker, I was on my docket one time, like 2 years ago, I think. And it was when we overloaded our schedule so bad that, like, we missed both. I think all of us missed, like, an appointment or two because it was
I did not know that.
We way overdid it. But now I'm like, oh, I should have gone because this game's pretty enjoyable, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Scott and I downloaded. It's the new Games with Gold for the Xbox One title, Max and the Curse of Brotherhood. The other one that's available is Halo Spartan Assault, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Correct.
Which we've actually talked about on different platforms.
Yeah, it came out on previously for the Surface, like when the Surface was released.
Yeah, and on the phone too, I believe, right?
Indeed.
It was a Windows.
Yeah, it's on
phone
all those Microsoft platforms. Yeah.
So Scott and I both picked up Max and the Curse of Brotherhood. I would like to say that Xbox.com sucks, and they don't even have the ability to download your gold games for one yet on there somehow. It's kind of amazing.
No?
Yeah, if you go to it and you say like, "Oh, my games with gold." It takes you to the one for the 360 right now, which is, what is it? I downloaded it. I just forgot what it is.
Dark Souls,
yeah. And I was like, sure, because I actually played that a while ago and never got even close to beating it because it's so brutally hard. So I downloaded that and I was like, well, let me find the other ones. And like, it's just not, whatever.
I think it's fixed now. The problem was is that they announced it, and then when Major Nelson said that it was available, it actually wasn't available because your system needed an update. And I think they needed to update something on the back end to get it to work.
I had the same problem, too. I got all excited, and I went to check it, and I was like, this isn't actually available yet.
Yeah, well, it does work now, though. But, I mean, you're right. When they said it was ready, it wasn't ready.
So I got home, downloaded it. You downloaded it as well, Scott. We both played, and I don't know how far you are. I'm on the third chapter, I believe. So
it's like
one. I completed
the game.
You completed it, so it's not much longer than I think where I'm at, right? I'm pretty close, I believe, to the end.
I think there are 20 levels in the game.
20 chapters?
20 levels total.
Oh, 20 levels. Because there's like 1.1, 1.2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
And then you switch to like 2.1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right?
It's funny you mentioned that, because not every chapter has the same number of levels in it.
Right, yeah.
Which is,
okay, well, whatever.
Sense, sure.
I think I'm about 3/4 of the way through the game. But so the mechanic is you are a kid whose brother gets sucked into this world because you said this chant, and you go in the world after him to get your brother back, and you have a magic marker that gets empowered by a dead old lady, and then you use that to draw vines and stones in the world, which help you get through a puzzle, essentially.
It's a puzzle platformer.
Puzzle platformer.
Yeah.
So the game is literally made for Ash. It's a whimsical tale of you being a little older brother, trying to find your little brother while drawing pieces of a map out to get further in the game. So you might do things like, you know, when you get more advanced, you'll draw vines that connect to branches that like get moved by lifting stones up, and all this stuff gets done with your magic marker, which is a pretty simple mechanic of holding the right trigger down and using A or X to like draw or delete essentially whatever you did.
It took me a non-zero amount of time to figure out that you could draw branches in any shape that you wanted to.
Oh, really?
Which is unfortunate because
that's how you beat some of the puzzles, though.
I know. Yeah, I had to. I quickly found that out because I was like, oh, instead of just drawing a straight branch, I could draw a branch in the shape of a box and then use that as a platform. Yeah.
I think they wait until like you having the branch. I think it's like the 10th thing that you need to do, and they're like, you know, you can just draw this in the shape of a circle, right? And you're like, oh. I can do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like all of your abilities are based on the elements in some respect. And then, which I think is really cool, because essentially you have about 4 or 5 different game mechanics that you can have at your disposal to kind of get you through these puzzles, which make for some really, like you said, some really interesting combinations. Like, you can tie vines to branches, and you know, you get water later on, and the water like can use to propel things out of your way. It's really cool. I really enjoyed it. So what do you think so far?
I think that there are moments where the kind of puzzle mechanic becomes tedious in the game.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them, honestly. It's relatively, it kind of feels like the game is not made for me. It's made for like a 12-year-old moderately. And I don't know if that's just in the art style, but the puzzles aren't so challenging that, like, most of them you'll kind of breeze right through. There's not like a, you know, there's not like a moment where you're like, oh my God. I think the hardest one that I dealt with was realizing I needed to push like a box on top of a rock thing that lifted a cage up, and then I needed to trap the two monsters like in the cage. That one took like 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, what I do like about it is that it is sort of a game about discovery, and you do get to have those aha moments where you're like, oh, that's how you solve this puzzle, and that's really cool the way the solution works, you know?
I think that the artwork is really well done. Like,
the game is gorgeous as far as if you're, you know,
way above.
Yeah, like everything looks like it's, you know, like early Pixar-ish kind of, like everything has, or like maybe at the level of DreamWorks, everything has like a nice kind of glow and texture to it. It has like a nice 3D feel. And when you're running through large scale environments, like when you're outside, like all the backgrounds look beautifully rendered. It's just like a really, like a lot, like you said, for kids, lots of bright colors, lots of great effects. Like, the game is gorgeous to look at the very least.
I think that it's fun to play. I really enjoyed it a lot more than I expected, I guess is the best way to put it. I was expecting like a kind of brainless whatever, I'll just see how this goes. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, I'm actually really enjoying this. I like the art style. I like the monsters that are in the world. I like the kind of forced mechanics of like figuring out how to get around the monsters, because there's different ones, and it is sort of like Ash jokingly said early on, I think unrecorded, but it is sort of whimsical in the way you play it.
It is,
which makes it a little bit more enjoyable. I think part of it for me that I'm gaining so much enjoyment out of it is because it is the answer to Watch Dogs that I have right now. So
the antithesis, I'll take a break.
I'll play Watch Dogs for like 6 or 7 hours of driving cars and shooting people and hacking phones, and then like I jump in Max and the Curse of Brotherhood and just like literally run left or right for like 2 hours. I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to run right, and I'm going to cut some branches down and figure out a few puzzles, and it ends up being really enjoyable.
I wonder if anyone's ever made a platformer where you start out by running left and you run left for the whole game.
That would be off-putting, I feel like, wouldn't it?
It would. I'm surprised no one's ever done it. I'm sure someone has done it. I don't want to say no one's ever done it, but
yeah.
Like, in most platformers, you do run to the right. Like, you always run to the right.
Strange.
Yeah, there's probably a joke in there somewhere if someone ever makes a video game movie.
Probably.
But I think, especially for free, I can't argue that. It is a fun game, and if you're looking just for something to kill some time, like, while you're waiting to go somewhere or whatever it might be, I recommend it, unless you're Ash. If you were, like,
it's also free right now, too, so you can't beat the price.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if it's free and it's fun and it's a really good time killer, and unless you're like allergic to puzzle platformers, I think it's a good example of a good, well done puzzle platformer that's not so challenging that you get like tired and bored of it or trapped or anything like that, but yet not so easy that you're just like literally running through it without any issues whatsoever. There are some moments where you'll pause and have to figure out how to get through a puzzle.
But the solving the puzzle is part of the satisfaction of playing the game, I think.
Yeah. Of course. How about you? I mean, do you have any major thoughts on it?
I mean, the only thing that I'll add to what you said is that what I appreciate about the game is that...
it's free, y'all!
It is free. That's true. And it doesn't do what a lot of other puzzle platformers do, where the puzzles are sort of introduced in the same tempo and encapsulated, right? So if you play a game like Portal, for example, like you go to one room, you solve the puzzle, you go to the next room, and you solve that puzzle and so on, right? So it's not that kind of game. It's like you kind of do some platforming and then you'll get a puzzle that's simple, but you're still moving. You know, the moments where you get clearly into a box where you're like, here is the puzzle space, solve the puzzle, and then you can move on. There aren't a lot of those moments, and they're kind of like spaced out in like a different order. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's not so predictable what's going to happen next within the game, you know?
And it's also well paced. There are moments where you'll hit like speed run type things where basically you're getting chased and you have to get away, yeah. but you're also solving puzzles and solving puzzles and like running and jumping in that moment as well.
Yeah, it's cool. There's like a little time distortion mechanic like at certain points mm-hmm. within that I think is really neat. You know, if for any other reason than just to give you like a feeling of like, oh, I'm awesome because time is slowing down. I'm solving the puzzle, and when I solve it, it speeds up again and everything works, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But I was going to say the thing that I don't like about that game is that, which I don't like about any platformer game. I hate platforming levels where the level moves you, like you don't move through the level. And like Mario Brothers is notorious for this. There's always a few levels within a Mario Brothers game where the board is moving and you need to keep up with the board instead of you progressing through the level, which, you know,
but
I feel like
this isn't done for arbitrary reasons in this game. It's done because there's a monster chasing.
Yeah, there is
you
a narrative device that makes that happen. But I just like, I feel like in a way that kind of breaks what platforming is like sort of from an exploration standpoint. But, you know, every game has it. So it's not a knock on this game. It's just like, just don't like it. But I think the game is great.
Well, so cool. I'm glad you guys liked it.
And it's free. Go download it.
I did some research, and it's actually based on a Danish game called Max and the Magic Marker, which won all sorts of awards in 2010. It was an iOS game.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the game that came out. And then it came out on Kinect-enabled Xbox 360. That's when I missed the meeting, which I think was 2 years ago. I think it was 2011 or 2012.
At a certain point, I was like, man, it'd be cool if you could just physically draw on like a tablet, like the solutions instead of having to like hold down the trigger and then move your cursor. And like sometimes that gets in the way because you need to move quickly, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Cool.
It's fun. Go download it.
Yeah.
Free Xbox games of gold. Why not?
You guys want to take a break and read some mail?
Sure.
Indeed.
Let's do it. Okay, guys, it's question of the week time.
Cool.
And
it's like a radio DJ. All of
all right, guys. So it was late last night, and I was like, I have nothing. So I just kind of spit out, hey, if you kept repeating the past 24 hours, and you can change any one thing, what would you change in the past 24 hours? And we asked you guys that question, what you would change in the past 24 hours, and you guys, of course, fired back with some really funny stuff. So let's go ahead and look at some of your answers. The first one is from Bunny Hanlon, who's at Winged Lioness. She says, do I have to? Too much work, no sleep. Yeah, that's kind of...
I'm just going to pass on the whole thing.
Yeah, like I am not reliving those past 24 hours.
Ian Musgrove at the Dark Phoenix said, I would have had a cheeseburger rather than a salad with hummus. Frowny face.
There's a lot of food choices. I wouldn't have eaten healthy. I'd just eat total shit.
Nobody's Business at Ocular Nervosa said, I'd have bet heavily on Tonalist, who I'm assuming won the horse race, right?
Yes.
Okay. I believe so.
Yes. 100% not Alistair said, or who is at Michael Cole said, that prairie fire someone bought me for my birthday. I guess he had a prairie fire near him. I don't know.
Okay.
Was that related to a different tweet and we just pasted it in here?
I have no idea. I don't know. It was a response.
It's like we play this weird metagame where we try to decipher the Twitter threads as we're reading the responses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows?
What the hell is TNLUK?
The National Lottery, United Kingdom. Ooh, go me.
Is it?
Yeah,
it is. So at Graham Pink at N7 Gray says, the numbers I picked for yesterday's the National Lottery UK National Lottery draw.
That's a very wise answer. A very wise answer. Just like, you know.
Yeah, if all you care about is money.
That's true.
Oh, I guess the question does say one thing. You can only change one thing.
One thing.
Sam Nee at Eating Green Egg says, instead of eating clean/healthy, I would fit in red velvet pancakes or creme brulee French toast.
Man, that creme brulee French toast sounds good.
I didn't know they made red velvet pancakes. That sounds delicious.
It all sounds good. We should just do that. We need to just go out and eat some pancakes right now.
Yeah.
Carlo at Platinum Fist says, tell my friends to sell their house with all the furniture included. Happy to help, but hashtag moving sucks. And I felt like I needed to speak on this. Because there's a member of my family who is currently moving, and I have a sort of a rule that if I'm going to help you move, shit better be ready to move.
Yeah,
meaning
my rule exists too.
Yeah, it's just if I'm going to spend many, many hours lifting heavy objects for you, I normally don't mind at all, but the things must be in boxes.
Hey, you helped me move once, and I think we all got it done in like 4 or 5 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. It was precision. You just move all the boxes, you put them where, and then you go home, and that's it. I'm not packing for you.
Yeah, packing is not moving.
I'm moving your boxes. That's all I'm going to say. So
okay. I have an addendum. My addendum to that rule is to have at least run like a Swiffer wipe over your furniture once.
Yeah. You've got to, if you're moving get some of that out, you have to clean the furniture before you move it.
Like I'm not mad that your furniture is dirty. I get it. Everybody's furniture gets dirty. Like that's just the reality of living, right? You know, but you're moving it. Take a second, just a second, just like wipe, and then you're done. You're ready to go.
Yeah. Help a brother out. Grab a dust wipe, wipe it down. Yeah. It'll take 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ounce of prevention. So,
Ash, do you have an answer? You want to just go ahead and do your answer or two?
My answer is I would have eaten 2 hamburgers last night instead of 1.
Awesome.
So Lissa at Lissa Bits says, wait, I'm not repeating the same 24 hours. Being a parent of small children sure feels like that. Slaves to the routine, man.
You know what? I'm not a parent yet, but the more I hear about people being parents of young children, it sounds like a death sentence. Like I listen to some other podcasts and people are like, oh, my fucking kid. Like it sounds like the worst thing ever. Like, honestly, it's like 10 bad stories for every 1 good story. And the 1 good story is it shit someplace where it was supposed to shit. Like do I really want that?
I feel like in the short term, you only recall the peaks and not like the stuff in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Peaks and valleys, right? So
it's true.
In the short term, you just remember all the punctuation moments. Then I think the longer term, you recall sort of the overall feeling, right? You know, the joy of being a parent, I would assume.
Yeah, but that's like a war vet, right? It's like, you're like, man, I lost all my friends and all this crap, but yeah, you know, if I had to defend our country, I'd do it again.
Yeah, see, exactly. There you go. You can, I mean, I'm listening, like we said, we're listening to Dad Is Fat right now, and I feel like there's a bit of that in there, too, where he talks about sort of the peaks and valleys.
All right, Haggis McHaggis, at Haggis McHaggis, says the amount of time I spend on the registration desk at the convention I'm helping run this week and go to bed at a decent time. So he would not spend as much time at the registration. I asked him what convention he was working at, and I don't think he got back to me, but he is working at a convention, which cannot be fun or easy.
Yeah.
Joel C. at Cliffy Joel says, skip work and play the arena commander for Star Citizen for a bit, and then work on the huge game backlog I have on Steam. I am doing the same thing right now, my friend.
That answer comes up a lot, too, the game backlog.
Yeah.
So, it's... Scott, is that your answer? Do you have one?
Well, let's see. What did I do yesterday? I went to the mall, and I went
to the mall.
I don't know. Maybe I would have spent more time looking at the Surface Pro 3, which I'm really excited about. It's kind of a nerdy answer. Oh, yeah. It's cool, man. I held it in my hand. Having that extra, it's basically the same.
12-inch now, right? Or 11-inch?
Something like that. But I mean, it's this. Imagine the same width of screen with like 2 extra inches on the top, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of got the same aspect ratio as a standard iPad. So
it's 4:3 instead of 16:9.
I think it's actually 2x3, which is crazy. It's almost like a box.
Really?
But that aspect ratio for doing like productivity apps makes so much more sense than the 16:9 of the original Surface.
So are they dropping the RT or is it just the...
Right now there is a... I think the only RT device you can get is a Surface 2.
Huh.
But... you know, that's an ARM device, and it's, like, not There's not a lot of happening there. Plus, Intel, I think, is threatened by the ARM device, so they're trying to do more. You know, you can buy that NUC box now to, like, make something about the size of a, you know, Mac Mini and shit like that. But anyways, I think that's maybe the best I can come up with right now, because I enjoyed what I ate yesterday. I had, you know, I had pho, so can't go wrong with pho. So I would have spent more time looking at the Surface Pro 3.
So Justin Banks at Midtown 583 said the contents of my meals, which is a weird way to say eat different food.
Hey, you know, like, just real quick, like, if this is the thing that a lot of our listeners would change, like, that's great. You guys are having a pretty good day. If that's like
true.
The only problem is, like, I need to change, like, I would have had the burger instead of the, you know, turkey melt. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not like I wanted to save my dad from a lightning strike or something terrible like that. So, Graham, who's at Prosperous Cheat, says, play my huge game backlog, learn new skills. Like that. Learn new skills. Figure out what lotteries to play, so if we ever get out, I'll be rich. That's the thing also about Edge of Tomorrow, is it's a loop. So he doesn't really know how to break the loop either, so he's kind of stuck in it. Well, he knows how to break it, but it's not the most pleasant way.
Jenny the Pirate says, I think I'm feeling too bitter about life to answer that right now.
So Jenny did have something bad. Sorry, Jenny.
Matt, what is your answer to this question?
So mine's food too, but I have a reason. I have a logical reason.
Okay, let's hear it.
So there's this magical application called Grubhub in New York. It exists everywhere, but really it's like huge in New York. And it's food delivery. So you can go on and all the restaurants in the area are listed. You pick your meal in the app, and then you just say, deliver it to me, and then food magically shows up like 30 minutes later. It's kind of mind-blowing. So we did that last night. We had some mediocre-ish sushi that we got from the restaurant down the street. Mm-hmm. I would change restaurants every time so that I could try out everything that's – because I'm in a new place. I could try out all the places in my new city, and then I would know what I'd want to eat whenever I get out of the loop.
Oh, that's super smart.
Very wise.
So it's not just – change a hamburger or anything. I want to know what Brooklyn Standard has over Brooklyn Label, you know?
Plus, you could go eat at a really expensive restaurant and spend a ton of money, and then the next day you could just start over again.
Yeah, you could be like, oh, I don't regret it. Unless you broke out of the loop that day, then you'd be like, oh, god damn.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotta pay rent.
Damn it.
Andrew Baker at abakerN7 says, I'm trying to think of something clever, but honestly, I'd probably just try more in different foods for my meals.
There you go.
Quality.
Our buddy Robert Freemering, who's at Mr. Slick, says, after possibly being a man slut and catching up on short games, I'd see which women in my life I could have a future with. Wow, Robert. He's going for the gold.
So debonair.
He is. Man slutting it up.
Dave Hooligard wrote to us on Facebook with a wonderful answer. And he says he'd ask Bill Murray the quickest way to make Andy McDowell love him so that he can move time forward again.
Very good.
Chris Jenkins wrote us on Facebook and said, try to do everything possible to make one person's day absolutely awesome. Oh, and finally get around to trying out all the games I bought during Steam sales.
There's a lot of like Steam regret. Like people are like, I have all these games on Steam and I never play them.
I feel like I want to do some kind of psychological study on buying games for Steam sales and never playing them. I bet they have stats on that too.
It's like buying just crap you see like on the Target shelf. Because
it's like
it's
that dollar
sale.
Section at Target, yeah.
Yeah, and never touching it. So it's like it's probably the same, you know, sort of problem people have.
Ash, you should close it out with this last one.
Oh boy. Last but certainly not least is Godzilla, who is at Godzilla says. And Godzilla says nothing.
I didn't even know
Godzilla's day was so great.
Oh no, Godzilla would change nothing about his day. he would continue stomping and destroying.
He's doing like a happy jump in his icon.
I love that Godzilla happy says account. It's amazing.
Fantastic.
I was elated that Godzilla wrote us. And we're done. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Excellent. It was good show.
It's a pleasure. thanks for listening to episode 156 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and then it is Ash, Matt, Scott, and Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. And you can find us on Facebook, and that's /nerdappropriate. And thanks for tuning in, guys.
Cool.
Thanks.
Look for our E3 special coming out sometime around this time.
Yes.
Guys, we need to talk.
We need to talk.
We need to talk E3.
See ya.
Bye. awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a little break and come back with some reviews. How's that sound, guys?
That's great. I like it.
All right.
Sounds like the format.